Do you need to prep for the GMAT? Are you dreading having to go to class? Are you unsure about online test prep? Our guests today are GMAT online test prep experts. We'll be speaking with the co-founders and CEO and COO of eGMAT, the GMAT prep company that has 1,818 reviews on GMAT Club and a 4.7 out of 5 rating. Welcome to the 304th episode of Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. The featured resource for today's show is the upcoming webinar, Get Accepted to B-School with Low Stats, which I will present on April 11th, 2019. The webinar is devoted to showing you what you should be doing if you are concerned that a low GMAT, GRE, or GPA will hurt your chances of acceptance. Register for free at accepted.com/304webinar so that you can learn how to evaluate your stats and create a successful application that builds on your strengths and mitigates the impact of those less than stellar numbers. Now, I met today's guests at last year's AGAC conference when they talked with tremendous enthusiasm about their company, eGMAT, and its approach to GMAT prep. Our guests, Rajat Sadana and Payal Tandon, are the co-founders of eGMAT, which they started in 2010. Today, they are also eGMAT CEO and CO, respectively. Now, you should realize, as I mentioned again, I'm going to repeat it because I think it's a really astounding number. eGMAT has 1,818 reviews on GMAT Club, and the overwhelming majority are 5 stars. Rajat and Payal, welcome to Admission Straight Talk, and congrats on all those happy customers.
Well, thank you, Linda. I'm very happy to be here.
Great. Now, can you give us the backstory? How did you both get involved with GMAT test prep?
Okay. It's a question that we ask ourselves, frankly, even today. So Payal and I have been very fortunate as kids that we grew up in families where we had teachers. So my dad's a phenomenal math teacher. Payal's mom, she's a phenomenal English teacher. She's a PhD in English literature. And essentially, growing up, we felt we had this privileged education where we had this personalized attention to where everything that we wanted to learn, we could learn in a really good manner. And so we are technologists at heart as well. So we said, hey, not everyone's fortunate enough to get a private tutor-like instruction because it's super expensive. And can we do something using technology because of our engineering background where we can provide an instruction which is similar to that of a private tutor but is available at a price of a book? Now, a bit of context to this is also really important. And this is when we thought about doing something in the education space. This was 2008. The height of the downturn, we were actually foreclosing our house. We had just moved to the US a couple of years back, so we had no money, but we still wanted to do this. And GMAT was an exam.
And we had a baby already in the house.
We had a baby, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
A 6-month-old baby at that time. And so GMAT was something that we knew really well, and we said, hey, we've got to do this, and we've got to do this now. And so we started with GMAT.
I would say everyone around us said, are you crazy to leave your job and then to start a business at this time of the economy? But we are like, you know, it's now or never. That's something which has been Rajat and I, so Rajat's passion and my passion, and we wanted to just get on with it.
How did you get interested in the GMAT? I mean, were you GMAT tutors?
Absolutely.
I assume you were, yeah.
No, so I think the idea was to build a learning platform which provides that private tutor kind of learning at the price of a book, and you had to get started somewhere. And so the beauty of test prep is you have a demand. And in GMAT, we had a segment which was not being served. So it was to carve a niche was easy. And the fact really is the circumstances. We had no money to invest. We had $10,000 to invest. That was kind of our startup capital and then our sweat equity. And we knew the content. We knew the demand existed. We had a niche identified. So we said, hey, let's start with the GMAT. We weren't private tutors. We had not done any instruction. And we had not created a single question ourselves before we thought about doing the GMAT. So,
wow.
Both of us were familiar with the GMAT as an exam.
Yeah. Because
we've taken the test. Yeah.
We've taken the test, but we'd not done any instruction, no.
No, not at all.
But again, remember, Linda, we were taught by our parents, so we had that what we call as a methodical approach towards learning, right. Which is what we wanted to impart. So you
came more from an education perspective, yes. Technology education or ed tech perspective, exactly. Than from GMAT. So essentially, you took a fresh look at it.
Exactly. And what we had in mind was that we have to create a product that can be utilized by people at masses at scale, that can be utilized by them to actually improve in this course. So our goal was never to teach in a classroom type setting. Our goal was to create a product and to basically engineer the product. So our engineering background really came in very handy here. Our focus on the quality of education, the kind of quality that both of us enjoyed during our growing up years, that came very handy here. So we came from a completely different perspective into the test.
Clearly. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. And now there are lots of test prep companies out there. Some of them are online only. Some of them are very dedicated to reducing the cost of access to GMAT prep. What does eGMAT bring to the marketplace that it previously lacked? Or I should say, coming from the perspective that you came, what did you identify as a lack in the marketplace, and then how did you fill it?
So essentially, the lack. So the background helped a lot for us to say, hey, we wanted So if you think about learning architectures that exist today in the industry, you have two architectures. One is the book-based architecture, and the second is a private tutor-based architecture.
And there's also classroom. There's also classroom.
We'll get to that.
So when you think about a lot of the courses that existed at that time, and even today, they are built classically around the classical book-based architecture. Well, they may have audiovisual instruction, they may have classroom courses, but it is essentially the formal architecture is a book-based architecture. And let me explain what that is. When you join an online course today, which is not an eGMAT course, you learn a bunch of concepts. And let's say you join a classroom course. And you learn concepts, there's good audiovisual instruction out there, but there's no feedback as to how well you've learned. So the example that I take is, let's say you've gone through a concept of even odd. 1,000 people go through it, they learn to 1,000 different degrees. Some learn well enough, others don't. But they don't get feedback, have they learned it well enough or not, right then and there. Then they learn the concept of prime, then a bunch of other concepts in number properties, and then they get to a classroom. So if 50 people are in a classroom or 20 people are in a classroom, some are equipped to handle the classroom, others are not. And this entire problem continues on as you go from one classroom session to the other and so on and so forth. And a few excel, who do that foundational work well, others don't, and others go back and do the same thing. And some of them do it on the second turn, others do it on the third turn, and some actually, a lot of them give up. Now, what we wanted to do was something where you say, when you're learning a concept, you basically should get feedback right then and there. So when we started building our lessons, the first course was in sentence correction. You'd learn a concept, let's say verb ing modifiers, and you'd get a beautiful video with animations over there.
A 10-minute long video.
That's 10 to 15-minute long video. And then right after there, there'll be an embedded quiz in which we'll evaluate you. And you'd get feedback on how well you've learned. If you haven't learned well enough, we'll ask you to go and revise portions of it. So when 1,000 people go through that, they don't learn to 1,000 different degrees. They learn to that level that we want you to learn to. Otherwise, you get that feedback. And then you
multiply that. You go back over it again.
You can go back over certain portions of it again, and you take that quiz again. And
the beauty of that concept file is that it's not a person just talking about it for 10 long minutes. It is a very structured concept. In that particular concept, you're going to have, let's say, 3 different objectives that the person needs to fulfill. So when he takes the quiz at the end of those 10 minutes, he would know, okay, did I fulfill these 3 objectives? Was I able to fulfill 2 out of those 3 objectives? Okay, the third objective I wasn't able to fulfill. Let me go back to that pertinent portion in the concept file, learn that objective again, and then come back and take the quiz.
Can you give me a brief example?
Okay. Let's take up the idea of verb ing modifiers. So in the verb ing modifiers concept file, you first introduce what the modifier is. Then you talk about, okay, this modifier has two purposes. One is that it can modify the noun entity, and the other is that it can modify the right. action that is involved right. in the clause. Now, so these are the three objectives, right? Now, so the first objective is, what is the modifier? To identify that, okay, this is indeed a modifier in the sentence. The second right. objective is that, is it serving the intent of modifying a noun clause or a noun yeah. or the clause, right? The third is the placement of the modifier. If it is placed after the clause, then what is the function that it actually fulfills? Now, at the end of the concept file, you would take, let's say, a 5 to 7 question quiz. Now, those questions are created so that those three objectives are actually tested. Whether you learned to identify that as the modifier? Were you able to identify its function as modifying the noun? Were you able to identify its function as modifying the clause? Were you able to figure out when it was placed after or before? What was the function that it was playing? So if the person is able to answer the questions pertinent to objective one, then yes, that objective is fulfilled. So that's the beauty of testing the person right there and then, giving him the feedback pertinent to what he has learned.
Okay. All right. What about,
probably see some of the engineering mindset there?
What is
Pardon
that?
Me?
You can probably see some of the engineering mindset there.
Yes, but it's very logical. What about longer term retention? I mean,
that's a great point. So I think you said what was lacking. So I think that's one thing was this that was lacking. The other thing which was lacking, and which is something which works really well when you're working with a private tutor, is a process, or what we call as a method to solve questions. Right. And so when you work with a private tutor, and I don't know, Linda, if you've ever, but essentially a private tutor will teach you to, when you attack a problem, this is what you do in step one, this is what you do in step two, this is what you do in step three. And when you solve 4 or 5 problems, when you make a mistake, the private tutor will work with you either explicitly or implicitly to figure out where you're making a mistake. If you look at books, if you look at a lot of prep companies, they don't really break how you solve a problem down into these steps. They really tell you, this is how you approach a problem. This is why this question, this answer choice is correct. This is why this answer choice is incorrect. But they don't tell you where in your thought process did you make a break, or did you diverge from approaching that correct answer. And so when you learn a bunch of concepts in EG Math, let's take the same modifier section, you'd learn 4 concepts on modifier. You'd get a practice quiz which actually tests you across those 4 concepts. Then you have an application file where you would get more difficult questions, where you don't just have concept level questions, but application of this along with other concepts. And we'll tell you, what do you do in step one? What do you do in step two? What do you do in step three? Then you have a practice file right after this to evaluate that application. So it may seem there's a lot of work, but when you go through this, it just happens so quickly. And because you're reinforcing that piece again and again, it's just like a private tutor, and you retain that information.
So that's the goal, was to give a private tutor experience. That is the lack that you saw at a much more affordable cost than private tutoring. Absolutely. And how have you structured, what is it like, if we were to go to your website, or a listener goes to your website, will they see one program? Will they see 2 programs? How is EGMAT structured in terms of its products?
So we have 2 kinds of products. One is, and they cater to slightly different needs, is what I would say. We have an on-demand product, which we call as our online courses, which are self-paced products, and they're designed for a segment of population who needs that private tutor-like instruction, but are motivated and disciplined enough that they don't want to they don't need to interact with a real person. And so if you're someone who says, I know I'm going to put in these 20 hours a week learning, and I'm going to put in week after week, I don't want anyone to tell me, hey, you didn't do this well enough. And essentially, we still support you with all your doubts, by the way. But I need that environment. But beyond that, I am on my own, and I'm very happy that's an online course.
And I want the flexibility to set my own schedule.
I want the flexibility to set my own schedule, and I don't want to be tied to a weekend schedule, which you guys have with the live classroom. So that's that student. And we have some people who are, 70% of our students actually just buy the online course and don't upgrade to live because they don't feel the need. And some of these, you have people who are, let's say, in Merchant Navy or doctors, where they get bulk of time and they want to spend 50 hours a week on one week and then not study for the other week and so on and so forth. Then we have an instructor-led course, which again is built on that foundation of Live Course. And the addition, the three additional things that this instructor-led course offers. One is accountability. So in the live sessions, we don't teach you concepts. We refine application, which means if you are in a modifiers live session, you should have gone through the modifiers concept file. You should have done at least one of the three application files before you come in. And then we'll help you refine that application.
And that's a very big difference from a typical classroom type coaching, wherein in the classroom itself, there is learning happening. So, exactly. Yeah. So in our case, you have to study the material. You have to know as to what is going to be covered in the session. And in the session, the instructor is going to reinforce the concepts as well as the application part. So it just gets solidified in your mind.
And that's how those sessions are structured, where the instructors would use, and that's where technology is beautiful, where you can ask questions about step one, ask questions about step two, and figure out if you have 20 people in there, how many of them are making a mistake in each step. And when you see, you know, four people consistently making mistakes on step one, you can really tell them. And we tell people, hey, my dear friend, you haven't done the concepts well. It's better you leave the classroom, go back, study the concepts. And you know, you have a session, the same session in a couple of weeks. Come join that session. It's a much better use of your time.
I would also assume that if you see a bunch of students consistently making the same mistake after reviewing certain material, then you can improve the material.
Exactly. That's why
we're still in that space, because that's data is amazing, and that's something which we give data out to our students, and we refine our content based on that data as well. So yes.
Not just from the live session questions, but also from the questions that we get through our forums. We actually routinely look at the forum posts, queries that we are getting, and we go back and refine our content so that the queries don't even arrive in the first place. Our goal here is to make sure that our course stands on its own, and the student doesn't really need to ask a question. Everything that the student can think of is answered there and then in the question, in the concept, in the learning nugget itself.
And that's a great goal. What if somebody gets stuck, mm-hmm. especially in your GMAT online? I guess in the GMAT live prep, they have the option of going to class and asking questions, and that's kind of the purpose of it. But in either one, and particularly in the GMAT online, they're looking at it, they've done what they're supposed to do, and for whatever reason, they're stuck.
So I'm going to give a stat to you, and then I'll answer that question, because that's stat will help answer. So in 2013, we had a run rate of about 200 to 250 customers a month. And in terms of supporting our students, online students, we had about 1.5 SMEs who would dedicatedly full-time support our students. Right now, we get about 800 customers a month, and you have about 3,000 active customers in any month, because the course is 6 months long.
Right.
And our support is about 0.8 SMEs. Right.
Oh, wow.
Now. So and I'll tell you.
And the customers are happier. So I find that.
Our SLA is better.
Well, I guess you've been improving the process.
So essentially, when we built the system, even for the first time in 2010, what we did was we created these support portals with every activity in the platform. So let's say you go back to that verb engine modifier, but because I think it's just consistent. You're watching this concept, you basically see an example. You have a doubt over it, or you're solving a question in that quiz and you have a doubt on it. While you're watching the video, you can invoke a forum. Now, this is a dedicated portal for that. And each of the 35,000 odd students actually have gone through that file. And so there's a 99.9% chance that if you've had a doubt, that's already been asked.
So we have a dedicated forum for every single nugget in our course. So the verb entity modifier concept file has a dedicated forum, which, you know, all the students have access to right there and then when they are going through the concept file. So they don't have to log into a different environment. They don't have to close out of the concept file, go to a different forum.
While watching the video, the video pauses, you see the forum. If your doubt is addressed, you go back and really, you know, continue watching. If it's not addressed, you post your doubt over here. Only our experts respond to doubts, so other students are not allowed to. And essentially, you get a response within one business day, which is our SLA. that and typically we do it within 8 hours, but just considering the time zone differences, we give one business day. Now, when you solve our quizzes, so we also, these are video files, but when you go to our quizzes, our forums are even more modular, where you have doubts by answer choices, and you can filter those doubts. And we build all of that technology ourselves to then say, hey, if people should be able to do that, it makes it easier for them.
For example, if you went through a question, you answered the question correctly, but you had a little nagging doubt about, let's say, choice E. So when you're reviewing that question, you can simply filter forum posts on that choice E, and you can look at what other students had actually doubts regarding choice E. So you can actually learn more about, okay, what were the other ways to reject choice E, not only by going through the solution, but by going through the forum post that you have access to.
All right. Oh, sounds, one other thing. Can you mention your guarantee for a minute? Can you discuss your guarantee?
Yeah, so we guarantee, so this is, I forgot to talk about the guarantee in the context of live courses. So we guarantee, so we have separate quant and verbal guarantees. On our verbal course, we have a plus 4-point guarantee, which means, let's say you're starting at a V36, we guarantee that you'd get a V40 if you do the course well. And when we say do the course well, you do the course well in spirit. We don't really pick, okay, you didn't, out of the 100 activities, if you did 90, say you've done the course well enough. We don't care about those other 10 activities. So start at a V36, you don't get to a V40, which is 91 percentile, we'll refund your money. It's as simple as that. Similarly, on the quant side, we have a 3-point score improvement guarantee. You started at a Q45, we guarantee a Q48, otherwise we'll refund your money. And all of these are pure guarantees, which means that we don't ask you to take the test twice. Yeah, so there's some other
prep companies. Just get your money back if you don't improve.
Yeah, some prep companies say you've got to take the GMAT at least twice, and other for the guarantee to work, for us, it's a pure guarantee. Also, I mean, a lot of people also think that we have a 3 and a 4-point, which means people would only improve that much. The average improvement on the verbal side is about between 9 to 10 points, which is what allows us to give that guarantee and keep our refund rate to way less than 1%.
Sure.
And the average improvement on the quant is about 7 points. And again, over there, a majority of our students start at a Q42. So there isn't that much.
That makes a big difference. Yeah. Q42 to 49 is a big, big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Major. That's okay. That's really helpful. And do people sign up, let's say, just for the quantitative portion of your course, or just the verbal portion, or the whole thing?
That's an interesting piece, and I think that answer to that has been evolving. Had you asked this question, I would say our verbal course, is about 65% of all our students.
Really,
and so that was a year back. It's more popular than quant. Right now, our most popular product is GMAT Online, and we've seen that trend over the last, I think, consistent trend over the last 15 months or so. More and more people are signing up for both verbal and quant. Right now, 60% of all our students sign up for our GMAT Online product. So when we look at products, we look at online only, because people upgrade from online to live, and that's a need-based thing. So 60% of our students buy GMAT Online, the other 30% buy just verbal online, but 10% just buy quant.
And even if they sign up for the online only, they have access to the forums. And we'll get responses.
Relevant forums, yes. Relevant forums. So if you signed up for quant course, you'll have access to, the forums are tied to the activity.
Got it.
So if you have access to an activity, you have access to the forum.
Would you be willing to share with our listeners your top 3 GMAT test prep tips?
Sure. I think that's something which everyone should do, regardless of whether they're a GMAT student or not. I think the first thing is create a milestone-driven study plan. One of the biggest problems that I see people is they say, I want to score a 710 or 730, and they start studying. They don't, and they really kind of hope that that they're going to put in that effort for a month or a couple of months, and they're going to get to that score. Don't do that. Think of it as a project, and make sure you have well-defined milestones. And those milestones, for example, would be, hey, I'm starting, I want to get to a 730, and I first evaluate where I am. So let's say I'm starting at a 600. So aim for a certain quant score and a certain verbal score based on my strengths and weaknesses. Then spend time to figure out how are you going to get to that quant score. So you need to have your milestones for algebra, arithmetic. Similarly, on the verbal side, you need to have milestones for sentence correction, critical reasoning, and reading comprehension.
So, experience, not having a milestone-driven study plan is, I believe, the most important reason why people have to take multiple attempts at GMAT.
Or give up.
Or give up. You know, it's like you have that dream of getting your MBA and you're giving up on that dream just because you can't score your target score on the GMAT. And that's because you're not able to plan well. You don't know that you need to plan for it.
When you talk about a milestone-driven plan, are you talking about I get this score by this date on this portion of the exam? And
yes, exactly. So think about it. GMAT's a very logical test. So if you when you think about your score of out of 800, it's divided into your quant and verbal scores. When you think about your quant and verbal score, so let's say a 720 score, a 720, one possible combination of getting to a 720 is a Q50 and a V38. Another possible combination, if my memory serves me right, is let's say you want to go for a V40 and a Q48. Both of them are good combinations to get to a 720. The question really is which one's the right one for you, because studying for a Q50 and studying for a Q48 is slightly different. Yeah, but that's just one of the starting points. But you have to, if you decide on either a Q50 or a Q48, hopefully you make a right decision, you have to figure out how are you going to get to a Q48, which means what in quant you have your arithmetic and algebra geometry ability. So what abilities are you going to aim for? So you evaluate yourself as your starting abilities and then you have an ending ability over there. And the same thing you do with arithmetic, the same thing you can do with sentence correction, critical reasoning, and reading comprehension. Have your starting abilities and have that end ability in mind. So when you do that, your journey to that 720 score is not like, it's not a black box where you're starting. It's a set of these five neatly defined milestones, which if you achieve those milestones, there's no reason why you shouldn't achieve that 720 score. So that's one piece. The second piece is make sure you allocate enough time to achieve those milestones.
That's actually going to be my next question, which is how much time do you recommend? I mean, I assume that would depend at least somewhat on where you're starting and where you want to end up. But is there any guidelines you can give in that direction?
Yes. So for every 10-point improvement on the scale of 800, we recommend anywhere from 80 to 120 hours.
8 to 10 hours, Payal.
Sorry, 8 to 10 hours. Yeah, sorry about that. Oh, that was really too much. So basically, for example, if you have to go from 600 score to 700 score, then you need to allocate anywhere from 80 to 120 hours.
Yeah,
now, the question is that where do you spend these 80 to 120 hours? Do you spend half of the time on quant? Do you spend half of the time on verbal? So you need to decide that. And how do you decide that? Based on what your starting and your ending scores are in both quant and verbal. Now, second, once you come up with that split, the second thing is, okay, how do you split your time in verbal? Okay, let's say you have to spend 60 hours on verbal. How do you split that time between SCCR and RC? You know, you don't really have to get to the same level of expertise in all the three sections. It all depends upon what your innate capability is. It all depends upon what your target abilities, your milestones are in each of these three sections. And that's the piece that people don't realize today. You know, they feel that they have to cover all the syllabus in SCCRRC. They have to get to the same level of expertise in all the three sections. But no, that's not really the case. At the end of the day, you know, GMAT is, you treat GMAT as a project. You consider you have finite amount of time. You need to prioritize where you want to spend time to get the maximum returns. And that's what the milestone-driven study plan does for you.
What's going through my head is, as you're both talking is I don't remember who said it, but I read it somewhere that a goal without a plan is a wish.
Exactly.
In fact, in our portal, we have this course called Your Study Plan. It's a 2-hour course that we built in Q4 of 2017. So the goal really was to enable everyone to create that, but that required people to go through a 2-hour course and then build their study plan themselves. And what we found in Q3 of 2018 was that hey, 40% of the people did that well, the other 60%, I mean, our students did that well. It's just people don't want to do that. So what we did in Q4 of last year, and we're just about to announce this, we created this tool called Personal Study Plan, where you can, which would be open to anyone, by the way, where in 5 minutes you can create that milestone-driven study plan. You can you can put in your starting scores. You can put in what you want. It has 3 neural networks running in there. You can put in how much time you're going to put in, and it will calculate a few things. One is, what are the milestones you should go for? The second is, given the amount of hours, number of hours that you're going to put in on a daily basis and on the weekend, when can you take the GMAT? And it'll show you how your score will improve as you hit those milestones. And if you want to change that, it gives you a very neat calendar view on a month-by-month basis. And you can really say, hey, on these 4 days, I'm not going to study. I'm attending a wedding. It'll adjust everything accordingly.
So that study plan is available to anybody, not just EGMAT students?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So that would be, so we will be, we are actually launching that tomorrow. We did, we've been doing internal beta trials. We've had close to 500 study plans being built by various EGMAT students. We just finished our round of VOCs this Monday. And so tomorrow it'll be deployed. On Friday, we'll be announcing it to EGMAT.
I'd love to link to that. If you can send me the link. The podcast will go live after your launch, date. So that won't be an issue at all.
Definitely.
I can give you a link to the beta. You can try that out and see that. It's just 5 to 7 minutes. And that's kind of the beauty of this was we read many voice of customers. We actually did one-on-one interviews with them, and every single one of them did it. And that was a smile on our face.
Linda, it's just it hurts us when people spend so many hours studying for it without having a good plan. And that's when we said, okay, we have to do something about it. YSP course that we created 2 years back, that was step in the right direction, but we realized, okay, that's not working. Now, this is another...
For the masses.
For the masses, exactly. People who are going through the course, they are getting it, but people are not, they don't understand the value of planning. And I think that's my biggest thing, that, you know, if you are treated as a project, you know, frankly, and that's something, that's a skill which is valuable throughout your life. I teach my daughter that skill right from the get-go. You know, it's just that planning.
Plan backwards. You want to get there. You're here. How do you get from here to there?
Exactly. So, yeah. So that's why we decided, no, we are not going to just have this for our students. We want this to be available to everyone, because that's one key thing which is missing across the board.
So. All right, so that's one thing that's coming out in the very, very near future, like tomorrow for EGMAT. And again, by the time the podcast goes live, that tool itself will be live. What else do you see coming down the pike for EGMAT?
So I can tell you a few things. I can't tell you a few others because
That's fair.
But
what can you tell us?
So the principle really is, again, you know, we started this journey to be someone who's to kind of provide that private tutor-based instruction. And we've done a bunch of things over there. Over the last three years, we've kind of revamped our complete technology architecture, where in the first iteration of EGMAT, just to really tell you the scale, we primarily used open source components, and we wrote about 10,000 lines of code to do this. In the third iteration, which is what we launched in middle of 2018, we wrote close to 1.5 million lines of code to really build that, and every element over there is ours. Going forward, and that allowed us to really enhance the degree of personalization. Going forward, we're doing some very drastic changes to our architecture, which would, I think, get us to 80 to 90% of what a private tutor can do.
Wow.
And that's something which is kind of about from now on for another year and a half long project. And so I think
and I bet you have milestones along the way.
Yes, we do.
when we launched the architecture that we launched in 2018, we actually had 3 trials. We had about 1,000 people go through that architecture across those 3 trials overall. And so only when we said that was stable enough did we launch it. So that's kind of, I would say, a longer term vision over there. And once we build that, we feel we'll have built it enough that we want to go into other tests from there on as well.
Yeah, because one of the logical questions for me is, do you want to expand specifically into the GRE or the LSAT or any of the others?
Those are logical verticals for us to go into, and essentially, so the thing really is you wanted to build the technology to that level where we are happy about it. We can make more money by going to GRE and LSAT or the SAT and ACT, but
sure, leveraging just the technology.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel right when we know that we can do all of this technology first.
I think for Rajat and I, we are really product creators. We want to make sure that our GMAT product is perfect, both from technology perspective, and we want to offer everything that we can to our GMAT students and then, you know, take that technology and then replicate it into GRE, SAT, or whatever. So, yeah. So, yeah, a lot of people have asked us, why aren't you going into GRE? So why aren't you there 3 years back? You know, I know the tenses are messed up there, but that's what people ask.
Come on, man. Do something else.
Yeah. Right.
But so in the near future, so in about a month and a half, you'd see us come up with our own mocks. And we offer very elaborate quizzes to those milestones. But what we don't offer today are our own mock tests. And so a month and a half down the line, we'd be releasing our own mock tests. And the kind of reporting and insights that you would get would be beyond what you get with, you know, the ESR from GMAT Prep, which, by the way, you pay $25 for. Or I think right now it's $30 or something. They probably increased the price. So.
All right. What would you have liked me to ask that I haven't asked?
When we started this business, and I don't know if you know this, we started this business with that focus on non-natives and primarily the focus on verbal overall. And over the years, and that was a niche, which, you know, when you're starting with very limited investment, you have to focus, and you have this loftier goal. You have to focus on a niche so that you offer that product. And essentially, since then, we've made more money with this business. We've invested it back and expanded the product offerings where right now about 30% of our customers are white Caucasians in America. So the question that would have been, hey, are you still focused very much on non-natives and just on verbal? You talked about the verbal versus quant piece, but yeah, the non-natives piece. And we've some amazing success stories with Caucasians.
With Native Americans, with not Native Americans, but with American,
with Americans,
English, Native English speakers.
Native speakers of English language, yes.
Yeah.
So Americans,
yeah.
Canadians, in fact, and I said Caucasians, but I think one of the things that I'm surprised by is South Americans. I mean, and for the pure reason that I have found that in terms of their diligence, at least the population that we come across, way more diligent than our typical student population. With regards to focus on something, they spend dedicated time and we do a lot of debriefing sessions. So we have close to 130 odd debriefing sessions in which we call as in the modern era of EGMAT, the last 2 years, which Pyle and I have conducted with our successful students. And a lot of these are really busy people, but they somehow figure out the time and they're dedicated towards it. They kill their social lives and they study well for the GMAT.
Yeah, no, I know a lot of people are very dedicated to study. I've mentioned on the podcast before, but I don't think you heard that I had a friend of the family's son applied this year, and last year he was studying, in his case, for the GRE. And you know, he talked to me before he studied, and he was working with a tutor, and he took the GRE and he didn't get the score he wanted. And he called me up and he said, "What do you think?" And I happened to be standing in this ridiculously long line in an airport. It was not very happy. So as far as I was concerned, it was a very nice fellow and it was a wonderful distraction from this ridiculous line. And I listened to him. I heard what he said. And I said, you know, I really think you have to retake. He says, well, he says, I have some relationships and I'm not sure they're going to be so happy if I have to study again. And I said, well, I can't tell you anything about your relationships. But from a purely admissions point of view, you should retake. And he said, I said, the relationships, you're going to have to decide that one on your own. So anyway, he was visiting in Los Angeles a few months later. He'd gotten the score he wanted. I think, you know, third time was a charm. He got the score he wanted. And he actually visited the day after with his fiance. They'd gotten engaged the night before.
Oh, that's nice.
The day before, yeah. So it was very nice of him. It was nice to meet her. But I said, see, I mean, so.
Today he got his milestone, right? He got his GMAT score.
He got the girl, too. He achieved all milestones, right? He's done very well in terms of his applications also. But, yeah.
I think that relationship is probably a lot stronger now that they went through this together. And I think it's one of the most important things when you're studying for any exam, tell people around it that you won't be able to. Set the right expectations.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
She seemed pretty happy when I saw her. So it seemed like they were, you know, doing just fine. But, you know, exams are a part of life. And my husband took a bunch of exams when we were going out and also first married. He's an actuary. And as long as he passed them, I was okay with it. A little frustrated if he didn't. But he did just fine ultimately.
I think I took my TOEFL 3 days before our wedding.
Right. So you know what I'm talking about.
Yes. And I guess another thing is, you know, preparing for GMAT, balancing that with your professional career, that's just probably just the taste of what you're going to see when you are actually in the MBA school, right? I mean, the curriculum is pretty strict and pretty dense, and the activities that you need to engage in, you have to manage your time. So the relationships need to be managed there as well. So this is just a flavor of that, I believe. So
right. He did fine. Rajat and Payal, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. And where can listeners and GMAT test takers learn more about eGMAT and your offerings?
So if I can just go to eGMAT.com, we can, I don't know where we can share a URL.
I certainly can. And I will.
Yeah. So I think, just share eGMAT.com if you can.
And there's no dash in that, right? It's just eGMAT.com, right?
Both of them go to the same portal.
Oh, okay. Fine. Great.
There is a dash in the actual name when we started it, but right now we own both the domain names. So.
Okay. Great.
Thank you so much, Linda, for having us over here. And good luck to all your listeners to accomplish their dreams. And yes, we are here for everyone.
We're here for everyone. And again, don't give up on your dreams is all I would say.
No, I would agree with that. We'll include links in the show notes at exhibit.com/304 to the website that Rajat and Payal, co-founders of eGMAT, just mentioned, as well as links to related articles and interviews. Listener, thank you too for joining Rajat Sadana, Payal Tandon, and me for our 304th episode. A quick reminder, if you are concerned about low stats in your past, limiting your future, again, just as Payal and Rajat said, don't give up on your dreams. Reserve your seat for our next live webinar, Get Accepted to B-School with Low Stats, which I will present on April 11th. You can register at exhibit.com/304webinar. And a final request, if you find the show worthwhile, please share the good word by leaving a review on iTunes. Your doing so helps us spread the word about Admission Straight Talk. There's a link in the show notes at exhibit.com/304 to our iTunes page where you can leave a review. And yes, you can leave a review on other podcatcher sites also. That's just fine with me. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week. Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.